This episode is brought to you by Microsoft for Africa. Launched in 2013, Microsoft for Africa empowers ideas through investments in governments, startups, SMEs, and the youth. The initiative provides affordable internet to communities, develops skills, and mentors businesses and governments that use cloud technology and AI. Visit microsoft.com/forAfrica for more.
Hey guys, welcome to the TechPoint Africa podcast. My name is Muiwa.
I'm Emmanuel.
And I'm Oluwa Nifemi.
Welcome, Nifemi. First time
Thank
on
you.
The podcast.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I would offer you my hand to shake you, but people are not shaking hands nowadays. At our SME clinic last week, which was a success, by the way.
Yeah.
That's why Titi is not here. Titi is resting.
Wow, because dope.
The whole thing was on her head. But yeah, someone refused to shake me at the event.
Oh.
I'm like,
The fear of coronavirus is the
even with all
of...
the sanitizers and everything.
Yeah,
we put...
were giving them sanitizers.
I think we're very
Yes, we controlled it well.
With that. Yeah. Anyway, it's like this coronavirus is like is affecting everybody.
Yeah.
And first of all, it's impressive to see how. So before we talk about Nigeria, let's talk about what's going on around the world.
Okay.
Facebook
canceled.
Has cancelled its F8 conference.
Yeah.
Google has cancelled its I/O conference.
Mm.
Mobile World Congress has been cancelled.
Canceled.
I know that Oppo was supposed to announce a new device there.
Yeah.
Now they are going to do it online via YouTube. What's going on around the world? Like,
everyone is scared of public gatherings. Like,
I think the fear is understandable. And I don't think it's actually fear too, because if they don't, there will be reactions from the global world.
Mm-hmm.
They will feel insensitive to what is going on. Since this thing spread through contact. So if they don't, they will get reactions. And still, it's reasonable. It's reasonable because we might not feel it yet that much in Africa, but it's all over the world. US has it. UK have recorded cases.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable.
But some of these events are not till May, right?
Yes. So they are feeling
that's 2 months
at
away.
The rate at which it's increasing.
They will not be cured before me.
So they are being pessimistic.
Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you wrote a story about how many of the tech companies are now telling their workers to work remotely.
Yes, remotely. For example, Microsoft office in Dublin.
Yeah.
After a case was reported in the office, the office was shut down and workers were told to work from home. Even though no other cases have been reported there, but there are other cases that have been collected in Dublin. So it's understandable. No workplace will want to endanger the life of their employees. So it's understandable.
Yeah. Is that possible in Nigeria?
The remote work thing?
Yeah, remote work.
I think it's possible.
Wow.
It might not be possible in the corporate world, like banks and
paper.
All that have to have physical presence. But I feel with the reaction that Nigeria is giving to it, if it comes to that, I think it's something that will be adopted.
I'm looking at the average Nigerian child having palpitations at the thought of this.
Wow.
I mean, at TechPoint, at least we do one day a week.
Yes.
Remote.
That is absolutely.
So it will be a new thing to us.
There
was even time we used to do 2 days a week.
So it's actually doable.
I think it's something that would be really, really far-reaching.
And with this Lagos traffic, I think people will embrace it. But
yeah.
I don't see the average Nigerian HR or Nigerian companies are sitting,
like Nigeria is still paper-based, paper. So, good.
Okay, let's say the tech ecosystem will adopt it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Most likely.
Maybe.
Because we know the tools
exactly.
that we need.
But the interesting thing now is, I'm hoping it doesn't get to that. I mean, I feel for everybody all over the world.
Mm.
But I think Africa so far has been, Nigeria especially, Africa so far, I mean, I think even experts were like, they are shocked. They don't understand
and
what's going on.
But there is a part where people feel we are underreporting the cases. Like I think Egypt, about Egypt cases, like there were only 2 cases reported, but they are saying they have like 20 confirmed cases already. So they feel Africa is under reporting the cases that it is not possible for us to control it this way.
Why do they feel that way? Because let's not forget the Ebola. Nigeria handled
Ebola
very,
very,
well.
Very well.
Yes, but Nigeria and of other countries, Liberia, it ravaged Liberia for a lot of years.
Yeah, true.
So,
true. Very true.
For Nigeria, yes, we might be doing that, but other African countries might not have that capacity.
Yeah, so I heard that the Italian guy who brought it to Nigeria, they already traced all the people he had contact with. So Lafarge, for example, has already traced 35 of their workers.
I had contact with him,
placed them under like quarantine. And the estimate is like 100 people, at least 100 people he contacted have been.
I think Nigeria is doing well. Yeah. And with the transparency too.
Yeah. That, our leaders are surprisingly.
Yeah, both sad and good.
It's sad. Why did you say that?
Okay, so it shows that, these leaders can actually do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But most times we don't see it happen. It's just in life or death situations like this.
So because it's all concerns them.
Yeah. Crazy. And on a lighter note, somebody was like, why didn't they mention the Italian name? Talk about the Liberian that brought Ebola to Nigeria.
Yes, Charles Sawyer. But they didn't mention the Italian's name.
Yeah, so somebody was like, why?
Interesting. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Another question someone at home was asking me was like, Italians, why are they spreading it in different places? And why?
Yes, they were the one that took it to Algeria. I think.
So why were we not able to? Like,
yeah, because they actually did report their cases. So I don't know what happened. Well, anyway, this is all making a case for remote work and the tech tools that make remote work possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at Oppo now already saying, since we can't announce our new devices at our 5G devices at Mobile World Congress, we're going to do via YouTube Live. So we're going to probably going to be seeing more of that.
Mm. And Twitter also adopted, I think, Google Hangouts.
Yeah. Interesting. So, I mean, maybe as the situation, we hope it gets better, not worse, to be honest. Yeah. But as it's going on, maybe we can start reminding people of more tools that can make remote work possible, especially Nigerian HRs.
Yes.
That cannot.
They cannot do without the physical presence. If you're not there, you are not productive.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's move away from all that depressing stuff. move to Safe Border. The Ugandan ride-hailing motorcycle-hailing startups has finally launched in Nigeria. After months and months of
speculation,
they finally launched. And of course, not in Lagos. They launched in Ibadan.
Ibadan feels like, yes. Because I think after Ope launched in Ibadan, then he moved to launched in Lagos.
Mm-hmm.
Then in Southwest again, went to Ibadan before Abeokuta, then Akure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to follow that trend, excluding Lagos, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel those places feel more safer.
Regulatory-wise.
Safer.
Mm. So this is that Safe Border had the insight, because we've always been hearing them talk. Even before the ban, it was Ibadan. They always planned.
So maybe they had a foresight, or they saw it coming. Or, I don't know, maybe they just got hint that something like this is going to happen in Lagos. Or the competition too can be a cause.
Yeah, there was a lot of competition in Lagos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they finally launched.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's an Ugandan-based startup, so they started in Uganda. Is it Uganda or Uganda? And then they've been around East Africa. I think they're in Nairobi, if I'm not mistaken, Rwanda, before they decided to come to Nigeria. That's just after they raised like $1.3 million. Wow. This was sometime last year, I think, or the year before.
Also be the first in sub-Saharan Africa.
Outside
the first what?
Outside East Africa.
Yes, the first expansion to sub-Saharan Africa. Outside East Africa.
Okay. So, yeah, they've always been in East Africa.
Yeah.
So, I'm just wondering, what if they started first in Lagos and they got this impression about if the ban affected them, and they got this impression that Nigeria is not a good market, and they just go back to where they came from?
That would have been interesting.
It's a very terrible experience.
When you look at the West, after Lagos, Ibadan is like the next best, the best bet. When you take away Lagos, the heavy market, it still has a population, it still have a huge market.
Yeah. Good internet.
Yeah, good internet connections and probably...
Somewhat good, yeah.
Yeah.
And they could also follow the path of Max right, that is looking into moving to Ibadan.
Ibadan, yeah.
Mm. So OPE 2, when it's from Lagos to Ibadan, to
they were already operating in all those places.
To Abeokuta. Mm. So they can just follow that trend to in southwest and see how it goes. Mm. And we also hope that also states, other states will not pick up this regulatory.
What may I worry more about is that the fact that I'm now seeing many of those bikes now having like
carriers.
Becoming delivery bikes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm afraid that it will become so many that Lagos will be like, what's happening
what
again?
Is that?
Yeah, that's a fear.
And that regulation
you
will come
see them with makeshift carriers at the back.
I don't understand. Like, they look like things they made with Ghana Must Go materials.
Exactly.
You just back it and on the move.
It's crazy stuff. Anyway, yes.
There's no telling that market still will become saturated soon.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But all we can't tell now is the reaction of the government. Like, what's going to happen?
I'm still talking about government now. Mm. With Uber, so the attention has moved away from motorcycles to cars.
Cars, yeah.
Ride-hailing, Uber. Mm. What's happening with that one? With Uber, boats, and all the other car-hailing services.
Yeah, so the idea of this Uber, Bose and the rest of them, they've not been presenting themselves as transport companies in the sense. They've been like, why does a digital platform connect riders to drivers and that's all. So most of all these requirements that Lagos State demands of commercial taxi drivers, they no longer demand it from their drivers. And according to what I found out, is they were initially demanding it from drivers in the first place, hackney permits and luxury cars and all that. But after some time, they stopped.
The hackney permit is like a permit for commercial...
Yeah, for commercial taxi drivers.
Okay,
so
it has always been there. It's not like a new
it's
thing.
It's not
like
a new thing. So it's...
Houses have been reporting. Yeah,
yeah. So what is just happening is law enforcement officers are impounding these guys. Oh, where's your hackney permit? Where is this? Where is that?
Which they've been doing before, to be honest.
So
maybe they just intensified again after the Okada ban thing.
So it's just a little bit strange for now that it's coming as a shock to most people. I find it weird.
But I think what is also like maybe, so I understand that one, but then the whole fact that we're hearing rumors about 25 million naira.
And 10 million.
What was that? Is it 25 million naira?
I think it's 10 million.
10 million naira. That's about $30,000 or so.
$27,000.
Per car? Or what?
The government is planning to license these ride-hailing services, and it seems they want to charge 25 million. It is not confirmed yet, but they want to charge 25 million for any of...
For $50,000.
$4,000. And if you have more than 1,000 drivers, but those below 1,000 drivers, they'll be charging them 10 million. It's about $27,000. So, but subsequent renewals for those with more than 1,000 bikes will be 10 million.
Cars, you mean?
Yeah, bikes, sorry. Cars, yeah. Then those with less than will be 5 million every year.
So they want to charge the companies, the Ubers and the Bolts, this money, not the drivers.
Not the drivers.
But then they are saying they are not transport companies.
They are not transport companies.
They're just an app that enables
that's the
connection
argument.
Yeah, thinking about it, I almost don't want to think that these are commercial drivers, because they own the cars. They own the cars. Mm-hmm. Just as if you're doing carpooling.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the real sense of carpooling. You're just leaving your street and you feel this person works in around my workplace, this person works around my workplace. Then you pick them up and you move.
Yeah.
Do we call that commercial?
Yes. Yeah.
So, no. This person has a personal car and feels I can make money while helping other people transit well. So I don't think my own opinion now that you can consider them as commercial.
But are you aware there's a business around it? So it's not everybody that is driving an Uber that owns a personal car.
Yeah.
Some people buy cars.
And give it to
I know someone that had four cars.
Oh.
Puts it into the old Uber, whatever space. They have like fleet managers that help them get drivers, manage the drivers,
and
all of that. There's a business around all of this.
And the college commissions from the drivers.
Yes.
I mean, it may be different in a developed world where more people are able to afford cars.
Afford their own cars.
And all of that. Or they can finance cars even if they can't afford it. So I'm assuming, yes, maybe like in a place like London, for example, there's nothing like this fleet money. But in Nigeria, where most people cannot afford cars.
Yes.
They are going to have things like that come up. Fleet managers, people that help them manage the drivers and all of that. But then don't forget that even in London, they talk about licenses.
Yeah.
They lost their license.
Yes, and okay, so this is not a Lagos thing.
It's just
all over the world.
Everywhere, all over the world, regulators are trying to understand all of this because, yes, they are a platform that connects drivers to passengers. You made a good point about carpooling and all that. But when you start to build a $1 billion business out of this, shouldn't governments be concerned? When you start hearing about stories like in India of drivers raping women, or even in Lagos, where some kidnappers booked an Uber, then they kidnap the person and take their car. It's happening a lot.
Yeah.
Shouldn't government be concerned?
Yes, they should. And when it comes to tax too.
Exactly.
Yeah, how do they
tax them? So that one now is another area that is very interesting because Uber is saying, okay, we are not, sorry, I keep saying Uber, Bolt, the guys, the ride hailing companies.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to single out one person. Says we're not a
transport company,
but just an app, whatever. But you're generating revenue in this because it's a collective commission.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who are you paying tax to? Because I don't think they pay tax.
No.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now they now push the responsibility of paying tax to the drivers. I'm earning a living, so I should pay tax. No, apart from the commission.
Okay.
The driver should have, because I think one of the things they ask them for is also their tax certificate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as a driver on this platform, I'm making money. I should pay tax to the government. What about Uber that is what about the ride hailing company?
Okay.
That is creating that platform for that and getting a commission.
Commission and they're not paying. Who are they paying tax to?
So now you now see their approach, I mean not like where they're saying, you have to pay 25. This is for them is like a desperate attempt to get some tax.
Yeah, it's apart from the
get some levy.
Yeah, apart from the licensing.
It generates some revenue. Yeah.
Apart from the licensing, they want to be charging 10% commission per trip. So
on the 20% that's this company is already take from the drivers.
Yes.
Who is the 10%?
The 10% to the ride hailing platforms, not the drivers themselves.
So the drivers.
Look at what happens here. Okay, for instance, a trip costs 5,000 and 20% will be like 1,250. So the government would take 125 naira from the commission Uber took from the driver. So they're not charging 10% of the driver's trip.
Okay.
Those from what Uber collected from the driver.
Okay, they're taking 10% of Uber's commission.
Yes.
That is appropriate. Because I keep saying Uber, sorry. Please, I'm not singling that Uber. it's just like when people say Omo.
Omo, Gala. Gala, or Indomie.
Okay, so please, ride-hailing companies, they don't pay tax. I'm not aware that they are paying taxes.
Most digital companies.
I'm not aware that they're paying taxes. So if the government is saying they want to take 10% of that commission, I think it's only right. It's only fair.
Yeah, it's fair.
If you ask me.
Yes.
Every government has a right to... I mean, we can all talk about how does the government use the funds and all of that debate. Yes, we have a right to ask for that. But every government has a right...
To tax. To tax. Companies generating revenue in...
Yeah, like...
its jurisdiction.
That is... So, I mean...
And I hope this drama stops someday. Yeah. The regulatory drama. So cars have their own share. Somebody says it's coming on. I don't know what else is coming. Yeah. The regulators are coming after.
Maybe boss.
So someone makes someone was making a point that, for example, in the case of Uber, Uber boats riding the companies.
Yeah.
Someone who had cars on the platform and build the business is blaming them for this because these conversations have been going on for a while and then every time they keep pushing the responsibility to the drivers and the partners and saying we're not concerned. Do you get that the fact that it has gotten this battle already is because they never were concerned.
Yeah,
it seems
they've not even been negotiating well on behalf of their drivers. They will just push everything to them. One of the sources I talked to said they told them, "Oh, your drivers will get so and so documents." They didn't ask for the cost of these documents or
where they will spend on it.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. They just say, "Oh, drivers, go and get these documents."
Yes. And when they get there, they will know the cost and the time it will take them.
Although from their own perspective, I can understand you're running a business. Your model is you want to scale. You want to as much as possible amplify and maximize the possibility to scale. So their model is when they go to launch in a country, they just go with one or two persons, country manager, run everything lean, so we're not a company, reduce every overhead and everything.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, that's how they're able to get to the valuation there. But I mean, you have to, balance. Every government has a right to demand things, for Christ's sake. There are some things they are doing they can't do in other countries.
Maybe,
so let's be honest.
Maybe we are getting emotional about it then.
Yeah, we are.
Maybe because of the way it's coming after the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're still trying to undo the ban, and another one is coming.
Exactly.
So it's just as if you are trying to reach on the mass, the masses, and...
And again, you don't forget, it's actually affecting masses like us, who are the drivers on the platforms and all of that. So I can understand. But if you talk to most drivers, they will tell you they blame the ride-hailing companies.
Yes. Mm.
That they've been talking about all these things. Mm.
Yeah, but when I look at it, I wonder why, because so far so good, it seems these ride-hailing guys, Uber, Bolt, they had the better part of it. The government did not even extend this courtesy to the bike guys.
It just happened out of the blue.
Yeah. You know the funny thing, in their own case, at least they were always
negotiating,
talking with government, and then...
it was looking promising right before it happened.
That was
it came as a shock.
That was a deep move. But yeah, crazy stuff, man. We'll be watching, observing what's going on. Yeah. And I wonder how is it in other African cities, Nairobi and all of that? How is it happening there? Well, I'd like to know.
Yeah, I've been seeing some reports, Uber and some other ride-hailing guys in Nairobi, they've not been flowing with the drivers too. Oh. It's still a case of ride-hailing companies versus drivers. They are not satisfied with the model that these ride-hailing companies are trying to operate.
That's the thing about innovation. Innovation will always be going ahead of regulation and
conventional
standards.
We'll
figure out all this is eventually.
Yeah.
We will.
All right. We're trying to build a mega city.
So, but the problem is, by the time we figure it out, innovation will be... Another
we
step
ahead
by
again.
Then regulation is trying to chase after it again. It's a never-ending drama.
It's fine. My never-end, is it?
Anyway, guys, let us know what you think. The whole things with the coronavirus is take the solution, remote work. Save Boda in Ibadan.
Yeah.
Ride alien versus governments all over the world. Let us know what you think. We'll be happy to hear what you think. We want to get your feedback. You can tweet at us.
Okay.
Via our Twitter handle at techpoint.ng. That's techpoint.dotng. You can tweet at us with the hashtag techpointafricapodcast. You can email us at podcast@techpoint.africa. You can get this podcast. Emmanuel, where can you get the podcast?
Tune in, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
All right, cool. Now, don't forget, our SME clinic was successful.
Yes,
that
was
last week. But we still have other things. So Startup School is happening in March. Nifam, you want to tell them about that, Startup School?
Okay, thank you. Startup School is a school where we educate business owners, startup founders, and teach them what they need for their businesses to grow. This particular one is for early stage founders, and it will be holding between 25th and 27th of March 2020. So I will be teaching founders how to understand equity structuring. We get them ready to pitch what they are doing. They will learn how to stock their team. They will also learn the concept of vesting and many other things that will make their business grow.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Nifemi. So they can go to school. You can go to school.techpoint.africa to find out more. It's not free. But don't forget, last week we were talking about how at the last edition of Startup School, someone sealed the deal.
Yeah.
First try, sealed the deal with
GIG.
Because he made the chairman of GIG. So you may not know who are the people that are coming this time.
Those that are coming, our instructors. We have been our own Muyiwa Matsuluko, the chief editor.
I don't count.
I'm
talking about outsiders.
Africa. Yes, then we have Dayo Koleowo, partner at Microtraction.
Okay.
We have Onyeka Akuna, CEO at Farm Crowdy.
Wow.
We also have Victoria Crandall, media relations at Insider PR. Mm. And our own Obi Ozov, CEO Cobalt 316. So you have a lot of things to learn as a startup founder.
Yep.
Yes. And this particular edition is inclusive and it wants every early stage startup founder to be involved. It's only 50,000 naira, which is $137, something you can afford, very affordable for any early stage startup founder. And yes, the tickets are limited, so you have to register as soon as you can at school@techpoint.africa.
Thank you, Nifemi. Of course, we still have TechPoint Build happening in April 30th to May 2nd.
Yeah, we're excited.
The largest tech and startup conference in West Africa.
We are.
We're expecting thousands of people, investors, policymakers, tech enthusiasts. We're going to discuss, and then, of course, there's going to be a startup competition. I think we've closed the form for that already. We extended it for a bit. That's a startup competition where the top startup is going to win $10,000 equity free. Yeah, pitch them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, but TechPoint Build is going to be action-packed. So you can go to build.techpoint.africa to find out more.
Yes.
We'll put the links of everything there. So. Anything else we should remember? Anything else?
Okay, so just in case you've forgotten, TBN will be enforcing the regulation on cash deposits and cash withdrawals from April 1st next month. So
April Fool's Day.
Yeah, April Fool's Day, yeah.
What did they choose?
So 3% for withdrawals, 2% for lodgements, that is deposits for individuals, then 5% for withdrawals, and 3% for deposits for corporate accounts. So there's a whole lot of conversation that will go on if this regulation comes into play. So it's already been enforced in 5 states in Nigeria and the FCT. Okay. So they're going to be implementing it nationwide.
Nationwide cashless policy.
Cashless.
Wow.
So,
are we ready for that? We're going to have to look into that.
This whole regulation, I personally don't see how it will solve anything. Cash, because it's 500,000 naira and above. And
an average Nigerian
does not end up to 100,000 naira a month. Mm. So the cash will still be bubbling.
Well, we'll look into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll look into the viability of that. All right, I think it's time to sign out.
Yeah.
Guys, don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. podcast@techpoint.africa. #TechPointAfricaPodcast. All links to every article referenced in this article in this podcast in the episode notes. Just tap on the cover and then you see them. We'll see you guys next week.
Yes. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.